She has a 12-year-old daughter. She's been through the gamut with testing and trying to get a diagnosis when her daughter was younger. She got a diagnosis of a pragmatic language disorder. She's been evaluated for autism twice, didn't qualify or wasn't diagnosed with that. Most recently was tested and got a diagnosis of ADHD inattentive. And they also found some delays in working memory and processing speed, but not the pragmatic language disorder. They've done speech therapy. They've done several therapies. So what this mom is struggling with, she describes her daughter as a sensitive soul. And she is really struggling with sharing this diagnosis with her daughter, putting a label to it. She's afraid that she describes her as kind of like an internalizer is the word that she's using, but a sensitive soul. So her question originally was, should I share this information with my daughter? Should I share this diagnosis? And you very strongly said yes, you know, that it can mm-hmm. be freeing mm-hmm. and they feel seen. So I'm going to change the question just a little bit. How do you suggest that she start this conversation and share this information with her daughter?
Yeah, let me just start with my own humility that she knows her child best. Mm-hmm. So anything that I recommend may not be exactly what's for her daughter. So this is what I tell my clients. I say anything that I say, because you're the expert, I'm the expert in psychology, you're the expert on your life. You can take it, throw it away, dump it in the trash right away, or you can put it in your pocket, save it for later. You can examine it, take parts of it that you need, or you can go ahead and use it. Take heed. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to kind of preempt with that. You know, I would say with starting with what are her daughter's struggles? Do you know when, you know, I give you a list of things to do and you do the first and the last thing, but you forget everything in the middle? Do you know when you start your homework, but you have a really hard time finishing it because you see a text message and then, you know, you realize that you're hungry and then you go to the kitchen and you forgot why you got there and, you know, those kinds of things that you've been dealing with for so long? You know how I'm really proud of you. You get such good grades, but it seems like, you know, you're kind of, you know, been struggling with like actually turning in your stuff on time or remembering your assignments, you know, to pack your backpack right. And just everything's a mess. Like, how would you feel if there was an explanation for this? Like if there was a way to understand it better? Oh, I don't know. You know, I think that would be good. Like, no, I don't want to know. Like, no, you don't know. Most people are going to be like, yes, please tell me, you know, that it's not just me, that it's not just, you know, a problem that I'm having, that I'm not lazy, that I'm not unmotivated, you know? So starting with that, but then going to the solution, because I think a lot of people fear having a diagnosis because it's just like a diagnosis and then stop. And that's actually not the case. Follow it up right away with, and we're going to get you executive functioning coaching. They're going to help with your processing speed. They're going to help with your working memory. They're going to help with, you know, these issues that you've been having and bring up specific examples of how it's showing up at home or how it's showing up with her friends who say like, you're never really paying attention to me or you keep interrupting me, you know, those kinds of things so that she can see like, oh my gosh, this is going to have a great benefit to me. And guess what? I don't have to struggle anymore. So when we think about like ADHD treatments and ADHD medication, for example, which treats the neurobiological underpinnings of ADHD, we think about it like glasses for your brain. And can I show up to school without my glasses? Like can I show up to school without my glasses? Yeah, I can. But I'm going to have to sit all the way in the front to be able to see the board. I'm going to be squinting and I'm going to have a hard time. And so much of my attention is going to be with trying to see that I may miss half the class material. Hmm. Let's get those glasses so that so much of your attention in class won't be on trying to pay attention, but it can be on actually absorbing what's going on around you.
That is great advice. I love that. Let's get your, let's get you some glasses. Absolutely. For your brain. Thank you. Okay. And a couple other questions from Janet. What are some questions we should ask when seeking an evaluation? What's a good age to evaluate?
Yeah. So some questions that you should ask are, you know, especially with the autism, what is your experience in evaluating autism in girls? Because like the previous mother who wasn't diagnosed, I wonder, you know, how much experience with girls, because it presents so differently. And then also like, you know, what can I expect? So you should know what to expect with the evaluation from like the first steps, as far as are there forms that I have to fill out ahead of time? How much time do I have to expect to fill out those forms? With any evaluation that you're going to do, you're also going to need report cards from that child or adult from kindergarten to their highest grade level. So, you know, when do you need those? You know, do I need to give you any teacher contacts or any, you know, other collateral or people who can provide other information? How long is the actual testing session going to be? If it's a full neuropsychological evaluation, it might take the place over, take place over several days. What parts of this can we do via telemedicine or telehealth versus what parts need to be in person? And, you know, what does a feedback session look like? Is it going to be parent only or with the child? Do I have a choice in this? What can I expect after the feedback session? And how long will it take to get my report?
Great questions.
Yeah, I know. I want to like speed it through that, but this will be recorded so you guys can go back and rewind and, you know, write down those questions. But, you know, just being, you know, curious, you know, you have the right to, you know, ask about this and be, you know, kind of eyes wide open ahead of time. And making sure that also you feel comfortable with the person who's providing the assessment, because it is a very kind of vulnerable process. You're opening up and talking about everything since the mother's pregnancy. And so you want someone who is, you know, kind and compassionate and warm, and not someone who's, you know, kind of mechanical or robotic or just checking a list off the, you know, checking a box on the list.
We hear that all the time from parents that have gotten evaluations from other professionals. So great advice. Do you have, is there a good age to evaluate? Is there a prime age? What is your experience with that?
All ages, as soon as you notice something, as you notice something, autism can be evaluated as young as 12 months. I don't do the little kiddos, but the ADOS does go down to 12 months. It's not as common. Usually at that age, the signs and characteristics have to be pretty pervasive. But around like 3 years old is great for autism. For ADHD, typically like school age. However, it can be even earlier if you're seeing a lot of hyperactivity and those kinds of issues. So there's no minimum age necessarily, and there's no maximum age. Keep in mind that especially when it comes to autism spectrum disorder, early intervention is the key to better outcomes in the future. Early intervention, and if they have, you know, some verbal skills, the ability to communicate, that that predicts future success.
Yeah, and I would just reiterate, you know, it's never too late to get a diagnosis and get help, but I would encourage parents not to wait. I mean, if you're concerned or you wonder if there's something going on with your child, you are the expert. And so check it out. You know, don't assume that it will go away with maturity or just because other people are saying, oh no, you know, just give them time. If you feel like there's something or you're wondering, check it out.
Yeah, I have a story to add to that. So I was reading, before we got married, I was reading my husband's baby book. Mm-hmm. And his mom had written in that he started talking around, said his first words at 4. I was like, you know, that's not like typical, right? And he was like, no, you know, I just, you know, my older sister talked for me. And so that was in the day and age where autism was not as widely known. And, you know, the numbers right now are like 1 in 68 kids versus it was a lot fewer before, but not because it wasn't present, you know, because obviously my husband not talking until 4 years old, that's a thing, you know, that's an indicator, but it wasn't tested. It wasn't the parents looking like, hey, there's something that is different about my child's development. Let me get this evaluated. Let me get an assessment. Contrast that with my child who is 2 years old, as with my our genetic history of having ADHD and autism, as soon as I started seeing things like rigidity and behaviors, and she's kind of like one step behind with her speech versus her peers, like when they, you know, typically they like infants are saying like, you know, 2 words, she was just saying 1 word, 2 syllables, you know, when they were saying 3 words, she had just started saying 2 words. So I was like, let's get her evaluated now. Took her to the regional center. Regional center is great for kids under 3. Everything is covered, you know, regardless of if you have insurance. And so as early as possible, get that evaluation so that you can get support. She now has speech therapy, occupational therapy, and what's called an infant development program, which is behavioral therapy. So that if it's just a 2-year-old thing, then she'll be, you know, continuing to progress forward. If it is, you know, early indicators of being on the spectrum or ADHD, she'll be able to progress forward. But there won't be that increasing gap between her and same age peers because it was ignored or overlooked or excused. Mm-hmm.
We have a few questions. They're lengthy, kind of all surrounding this frustration that moms are experiencing with trying to get their daughters diagnosed and get them to be recognized by the professionals in their life. So Alicia, this is long and I'll read through it quickly. I keep telling the doctors in the school that there is more to my 15-year-old daughter's story. She had a birth injury and hypertonia, so rigid tight muscles at birth. ADHD and anxiety have been diagnosed, plus we have counseling. She still fails in keeping attention in class and completing homework, needs constant reminders to stay on task, come back to the current task, and get off YouTube, which is her usual distraction. Mm-hmm. On her own at school and still not passing classes, what do I need to say to the doctors in school to test? What should they test for and help her so she can thrive?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not evaluating this child, but what basically, based on what she's describing, it sounds like the child is dealing with executive functioning issues, which are secondary to both ADHD and anxiety. This is where a place like Stowell Learning Center comes in place, where they provide the executive functioning coaching and the educational therapy, where, you know, counseling therapy for the mood disorder, for the anxiety, and for how she's navigating it is very important. And she needs the supplemental of, okay, let's build a plan to help you stay organized, to help you be able to manage the tasks. One of the things that your center does and other executive functioning coaches is like, okay, so you're having a really hard time finishing your homework because you want to do YouTube and, you know, all these things, you know, this flight of ideas. Let's set a timer. So I'm going to have you be on task and work for 10 minutes, and then you get a 5-minute fun break. And then during that 5-minute fun break, I want you to get up, get mobile, and do something that you enjoy. So one of my past assessment clients, her educational therapist would recommend that she play ping pong during the breaks. So having that kind of, it's behavioral conditioning that can be taught by an executive functioning coach or an educational therapist is really helpful. I'd say for this mom, instead of trying to pursue additional diagnoses, go to the interventions, go to the treatment. Mm-hmm. also consider that ADHD, like I said, is a neurobiological brain difference. And so there's something on a neurochemical level that needs to be addressed as well. So in addition to therapy, the child could struggle a lot less if this child had medication or alternative treatments that serve a similar pathway to medication. So that could be brain neurofeedback or brain biofeedback, which is neurofeedback. That could be, you know, different diet changes, you know, those kinds of things. But, you know, addressing the biological aspect is also really important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you.
Would you add anything to that, Jill? I know this is more your area of expertise, the intervention side.
You know, I think you covered that really well. And yes, I would also begin to look at the intervention side of it. It will move her forward more than continuing to nail the diagnosis, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And then Jalixi is asking, and this might be hypothetical question, why is it so difficult to be diagnosed? I have 3 children, and in every case, there's a diagnosis. The diagnosis has been because I researched a lot, but everything takes so long because my background is not in health or psychology. And my older daughter, her diagnosis has been in pieces, and I'm always wondering what, and then it got cut off, but kind of like why that is. Why, and we've heard this from a lot of parents, why is it, parents are asking, like, why am I the one that has to bring this to the professionals, you know, to the table, and, you know, or to the school? Any thoughts on that?
It's the same reason why girls get missed. Mm-hmm. So when you're reading the accounts of people who are living this, it's like, actually, I had to bring it to my therapist. They didn't notice it themselves, or I had to bring it to the evaluator, like, hey, this is what's going on. This is also why we've seen a rise in evaluations with people following different influencers on TikTok. Because they're like, oh, they're hearing about the ADHD symptoms. They're hearing about the autism and girl symptoms. And they're like, this is my life. Mm-hmm. And then they go and pursue it. So that's kind of one case. Like if you are, you know, twice exceptional, you know, meaning it, you are able, or your children are, you know, really bright and able to compensate and very skilled at masking, you know, it will get missed. But then there's also an issue of health equity as far as being able to access diagnosis. So sometimes we have school psychologists who can test in the schools. Oftentimes they have waiting lists that are months long. And even, you know, if you can't afford out-of-pocket private practice evaluations, still there may be waiting lists that are months long. And, you know, all the waiting that you have to do and the kind of self-discovery and self-management, I say just kind of like hold on to hope and consider that, like, if you don't fight for your kids, who is? So continue to like be that advocate. And it's also very tiring. So make sure that you're working on different avenues of like your own wellness and your own replenishing as you're being this advocate and being this caretaker and having to fight and struggle so much. Make sure that you have people around you who can support you and who can give you a mental energy break and all that so that you can continue the good fight.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then Janet is asking, what if you feel that the result of an evaluation is not the true profile of your girl? So, or a misdiagnosis, if you will. In my case, my daughter got an autism diagnosis, but later it was removed. So again, kind of speaking to that mom's gut kind of feeling, like this instinct, it doesn't, you know, I got a diagnosis, but it doesn't sit well with me.
Sit right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, parents know their children best, and sometimes parents are also wrong. Because we think the best of our children, and we as nurturing parents have found ways to accommodate our children's needs.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I had one person that I evaluated, and she was 17, And she actually got evaluated after her brother. Her brother was the identified patient in the family because he was like throwing things in the classroom and had to be homeschooled, and he had all these externalizing behaviors. The sister, she was internalizing. So although she was older and she had struggled for so much longer because she was kind of quiet and compliant and still got good grades, the parents were like, oh, she's fine. And it wasn't until she brilliance, 99 percentile IQ, until she started failing all her school, all her grades, and had to be put in like a continuation type classroom, the parents were like, okay, something's happening. What's going on? We know she's depressed, but what's going on? And it was during that evaluation that it was discovered that she did have autism. But one of the evaluation measures is called the ADIR, the Autism Diagnostic Interview, and then revised. And as I'm talking to the parents, they had normalized the behaviors. So she, when she was younger, every time that they passed by a fire hydrant, they had to stop. They had to stop and let her climb over or she would melt down. And but it wasn't problematic for them because they're like, this is just how my daughter's special. You know, so of course, we're just going to stop. And she had a special interest and like collecting, you know, bugs and, you know, making jewelry out of it. But it was like intense, you know, all the species and the, you know, all these things or whatever. It was just like amazing. She's brilliant. Oh, that's just her hobby. We support her. She didn't have friends, but like, oh, she's just quiet. She's more to herself, you know? So, and when we did the, like the checklist and inventories, everything came up normal. Because they didn't find her behaviors problematic. It wasn't until I could come in with the clinical eye and say like, oh, actually, that's a little bit atypical. Or, oh, actually, you know, this is, you know, something that, you know, is not usual for her. This is something that she's actually struggling with, you know, that we can get some support around. And, you know, the way that I had shared with the parents is like, amen and praise to you that you made your daughter feel fully seen and fully accepted and just fully like embraced, that she didn't feel like any of these eccentricities were weird. Her friends did, but like the parent, she was fully, fully accepted. But now that that 17-year-old girl knows what's going on for her, she can move in life with freedom. And her parents emailed me like a month later, like, wow, now that we know how our daughter is different, we've totally approached our, reapproached our parenting style. We know, you know, how to best support her. So that's kind of just going to the case of like, you know, sometimes parents don't, you know, get it right. And it's because you're nurturing, because you're so caring. And if there is a blatant misdiagnosis, which is very rare, you know, feel free to get a second evaluation. Unfortunately, and, you know, myself being a parent as well, there's a lot of self-protection, you know, because how could I have missed this? How could I have not seen this? I'm with this child all the time. And so there's like some guilt and some shame and things that come up, and it's easier to just deny it and say like, no, that's not an issue. You don't know what you're talking about, than to accept like, I'm a human and I have limits in what I'm able to see because I see this child in this way. And so that's why you hire someone else who can be objective and, you know, gather information from different sources and be able to better support you and your whole family.